Okay. Talking with Ali just after Mijan's talk, he was asking us where we have used this area locking in to try to cure one of these problems that we've seen in the single black hole evolutions, and we've actually been able to do it. Makes the code twice as expensive. It's a very dirty trick to implement this area locking, but we can say it's working. I mean, we can make it work for a single black hole space-time. However, as Mijan mentioned, there are several problems, and we think we have the answer for some of them. But since we truly believe in conservation of misery, we said, okay, let's go into trying binary black hole space-time, and let's try to find more problems there to make our life even more miserable. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. So I'm going to be just describing our first set of grazing collisions of black holes and what we've learned from those runs. So the basic setup we have is two black holes with the same mass that are going to be boosted towards each other in a sort of a grazing collision. I didn't know about that, but Larry has just mentioned to me that in the past they tried something similar with Bryce DeWitt, and he's going to be sending us his notes about those days. So the initial separation of these two holes are 10m, where m is the mass of each hole. And all the runs we've tried so far is these two holes boosted towards each other with a speed of half the speed of light. And either the spins are aligned either both in the plus C direction or in the minus C direction. So, well, the first thing you have to address if you want to try to put two holes is how you put the initial data. Bernd Brugmann has a way of doing that but we are using a different one. The main difference being that we want some sort of slicing that penetrates the horizon so that we can apply these excision techniques. So what we are doing is a method proposed by Matzner, Huck, and Shoemaker, what you do is basically superpose two Kerr black holes, and you use that as your conformal metric in the York, Klingner-Ulrich, Schoke-Broad method to solve the constraint. So you say this is your base metric that you read off from the Kerr-Shield form of the Kerr or Schwarzschild space-time metric. You superpose two of them. Then you put that in the Hamiltonian momentum constraint. And then there are some four elliptic equations that remain to be solved in order for the constraint to be satisfied. We do have, at the moment, a code that will solve those equations for the case of non-spinning black hole, and that was worked by Karen Camarda and Pablo Laguna in Penn State. But this code cannot, at the moment, implement spinning holes. So we wanted to see how the code would behave when you wanted to run the spinning holes. So we would say, let's just superpose two spinning black holes, boost them towards each other, and see if we can evolve that. We don't have at the moment a code that would solve the elliptic equation for us, but for the separation, if you imagine these two holes being too far apart, then the violation of the constraint would be really small, and you wouldn't need to solve the constraint. Since we're putting these two holes fairly far apart, the non-satisfaction of the constraint is rather small, and in fact it's below the discretization error that you get by just using finite difference with our current resolution. So for a resolution of about m over 5, we find out that the error that we're making by just superposing this black holes is below the truncation error, and we don't need to solve the constraint. There is a further way of doing this superposition where you try to basically attenuate this dissatisfaction of the constraint, and you can actually use the resolution as fine as m over 8, and you still don't need to solve the elliptic equations, but that's what we're doing at the moment. If we want to go to finer resolutions to do convergence checks or things like that, we'll have to solve the elliptic equations, and there is a project ongoing in that direction. So this is basically what the Hamiltonian constraint looks around one of these holes. when you do this simple superposition, this is how the blue circles basically indicate the value of this Hamiltonian constraint, and you see that it's very badly violated near the hole. While if you superimpose with this method that Marinetti suggested, by in which you basically attenuate the influence of one of the holes around on the neighborhood of the error, then you can make this thing go down, and so the Hamiltonian and the momentum constraints are not badly satisfied. So that's the initial data we're going to be running. The second question that you have to address is, well, what cage conditions are going to be used in this run? So again, we do not know what the best choice of cage conditions is going to be, and we took the naive approach to say, well, if you are just superimposing the solutions, let's also superimpose the cage and the shift. So what we are doing is, well, we are going to be obtaining the lapse and the shift from this superposition, and since we're going to be having these two separate black holes, and we know the lapse of each black hole, well, let's say we'll use the lapse as being the sum of the lapses minus one, so that we have the correct limit, and the shift just being the sum of the shifts. So it's a very naive approach, but it's actually quite nice to see that even with that naive approach, you can actually obtain some rough evolutions. After a while, these two holes are going to collide, they're going to merge, and you have a single black hole. And so at that time, we'll say, okay, let's just use the lapse and shift corresponding to a single Schwarzschild or Kerr black hole with, say, twice the mass. You also need to give outer boundary conditions, and as Mijan said, we are using mainly this blended boundary condition where at some outer sphere you just blend or superimpose the numerical obtained solution with some analytic solution at the outside. Again, we do not have the analytic solution, but we're going to be using this superposition of solutions before the merger and after the merger, the solution corresponding to a single Schwarzschild or Kerr black hole. We want to excise the singularities, and what we do is, well, we find the apparent horizons given any slice, and we just take some part of its interior out of our computational domain. So when we have two separate black holes, so, we use this level flow method, which is a method developed mainly by Shoemaker and her thesis, that is a method that can actually find these joint holes and can actually distinguish where in your initial data you have two apparent horizons. Just this rather slow method. So after a while, when we know that these two holes have collided and we have a single apparent horizon, we use the boundary value approach developed by Mijan in his thesis, which is much simpler and much more cost-effective approach. And we excise the region inside the apparent horizon minus a few buffer zones just for numerical reasons.
And question about the lapse and shift. The holes are moving, so the lapse and shift are explicit functions of space and time.
Right.
Even by which position of the hole when you're
there, you're boosting each hole, so you basically think there is no influence from the other hole, and you just add them up. And that, so we'll have errors because, as we said, we need the correct shift to push these points outwards, so we're not going to be using the correct one, and at the end of the day, the run will crash because we haven't been taking into account the best possible option. But it's a sort of a proof of concept to see if we can put these things together.
But precisely the generalization.
Right. We do a correction. That, in fact, this was what we did. We ran this thing for the first time, and it actually ran for a few M, and then the code crashed. You go and see where the horizon is and what region you are excising, and in the very few previous steps, you're very close to uncovering the singularity. So you say, well, that's what it's making the code crash. We're uncovering this. We're not following with the right speed this hole, and we have to push it faster. So we change a little bit the speed. Instead of this area moving at 0.5, the speed of light, we make it move at 0.55, and that takes us all the way to this collision of holes.
But on the same line, 35 perfectly the last of the
No, we haven't touched the last and the shift yet. So we have a little movie, but it has very few frames. So it, just to make it clear, these are snapshots. So this is basically the initial setup. This is a cut of the GXX component of the metric at C equals zero. This is, these are the initial two holes. That area inside the holes that you can see much clearer here is the area that we don't compute. It's excised from our domain. We let the core run. The holes come together. At some point, they emerge. This is about 5M. And in fact, there is a common apparent horizon at about already 4M, but it's so distorted that the excised region had to be also really distorted. We said, let's wait for a little bit more and make our life simpler. And so this is how the evolution goes. At some point, you start seeing the contribution, the reflection from the from this outer boundary where you're putting this superposition in order to define outer boundary data. And then at about 18M, the code crashes because there is an unbounded growth of this spikes there. The initial separation, 10M. 0.5, each pulse is 0.5. So this is basically a snapshot of the apparent horizon. So here you see that there is a common apparent horizon already at 3.8, as I said, and it's distorted. So this is the x direction, and it's distorted in the direction of the holes. One hole was at, say, 1M in the plus y direction, and the other hole was minus 1M in the minus y direction.
Is that a coordinate shape or an isometric shape? Or
this is a coordinate. It's a coordinate shape. And so as the evolution proceeds, you see that this apparent horizon is actually spinning. You can actually see some effect of the spinning of the total angular momentum. So let me try to see this moving.
What's the coordinate separation between the two holes?
When the common apparent horizon form, let's see, it's about 3.something m. 3.4m. Of a single hole. Of each single hole. So this in all this talk, M is the mass of each hole. So if you want to compare it with the runs that Baron Brugman was showing the other day, I think you were showing M being the total mass system, right? So if you want, you have to divide all by times for by two, approximately. So this is the little movie. If it runs, go again. You have to train your eye. Then you can see how these two separate regions eventually come together. We excise the whole thing, and the code keeps running. Yeah, I know. I don't think so. So this is. Just assuming in this excised region, so what you this quasi-transparent area is the apparent horizon. This kind of brownish area inside is the area that we are excising. The color map? It's the just the value of GXX, basically. And the spikes are coming in from these sides, and there are a combination of problems there. We're not given the correct outer boundary conditions. We do not have the appropriate or the most desirable gauge conditions in our run. And so we might not be pushing the points outward fast enough so that we don't have this, we try to avoid this grid sucking. So we're studying at the moment what are the main problems to be addressed in this run to make it keep going. But I think in my perspective, important problems is the gauge conditions and the outer boundary. This with the classical ADM system. When one can monitor the apparent horizon area just to see how this thing is growing, that is also an indication of where we are having grid sucking or not. And if you put, say, the outer boundaries at, we have them at 10M, this is what you get, this jaggy line, which is which is very discontinuous, and we didn't like that. So we said, let's try to have the outer boundary influence us the least possible. So we said, let's keep the same resolution, push the boundaries further out. Now we have them at minus 20. And we rerun the code, and this is the line we got. So it's a pretty smooth line, but the value we get is extremely high. If you think that is, you started with this hole of mass m, you end up with a hole of mass 2m, then the area that you expect at the end of the run is about 200. And we're getting here about 320, so it's a huge error there. It might be that we're also pumping in energy both from the outer boundary and both from our initial data. We're trying to, by improving the outer boundary and solving the constraint, we'll get rid of those problems. That's not really a big issue. But this is also an indication that there's probably a pretty big grid sucking effect that we have to counteract somewhere.
How much kinetic energy do you have?
Hmm?
How much kinetic energy do you have in the initial condition?
It's not that much. If you have two holes with 0.5, so it would make this number go from 200 to 20 to 40, but not much. Well, your coordinates are falling in, and so with respect to that coordinate, then whatever it was at r equal to m.
This is
the
coordinate area.
So this is the coordinate area. Is it a metric area or a coordinate area?
There's a metric area. Because of that. It's the same problem that Larry was mentioning in his talk, that you just have steep gradients there and your apparent horizon area thinks that it's growth. So, that, so we have to cure that problem. No, I wouldn't trust the area there because there are all these problems that, I mean, we have to get rid of. I mean, we don't know how much energy was contained in our non-satisfaction of the constraint in the initial data. That probably.
You give yourself initial data.
Right.
I mean, I don't care whether it's physically correct or not. Now you evolve it.
Right.
Now, so you'll get some solutions. So just mathematically, can I not trust that solution for 6m?
But you cannot trust. Well, in order to trust the solution, first we have to do a convergence test. I mean, we have to go through all that. We haven't gone through that. First, because in order to do that, we have to be able to use a finer discretization, and we cannot go through much finer discretization because we're not solving the constraints. So at some point, that dissatisfaction of the constraints is going to be showing up.
I think you guys should always find the course of resolution.
Well, but then if you do a course of resolution, you do not have enough points to excise the hole and do the appropriate causal difference. So there is a minimum resolution that you can run off.
Okay, so you guys really are at the minimum.
And we're basically at the minimum. So that's the problem. We're going to step backwards. just to start seeing where we have the appropriate tools. Of the day when we have all the things together, we can try to analyze these two black hole collision. The main thing we're interested in is in the waves. So, as it was mentioned, Peter mentioned, the only way to actually know what the waves are is go all the way to Sky, calculate Psi4 or the news, and that's an invariant way of defining waves. But when you have a discrete box, and that's all you have, as Bernie was mentioning, well, you have to come up with waves to just trying to get the feeling of what the waves are looking like in this run. So we're using Psi4, as the Gong group is using, to monitor the gravitational waves. And then we also calculated the news of the sky, if assuming the matching works. And we are just using very naive null vectors that you can construct. You get, let's say, the time vector right here. You basically go through the Gram-Schmidt procedure to construct the orthogonal vector, and you make them be null. But it doesn't have anything to do with the actual theta that you would be using at Sky to measure.
Which direction do you choose for?
Oh, we. the special, we have two preferred directions, the T direction and some quasi-radial direction being defined by just the Cartesian grid. So it need not make any sense at all when you're that close. Right.
And then you have to choose the M and M bar on this.
Right. Well, there you use a, you choose one that you you try to make it as orthogonal as possible. You take the product, the inner product between the two, and then you just add whatever you have to add to that vector so that it's actually orthogonal. And then the last one you get by just a Gram-Schmidt procedure. I mean, you can come up with four orthogonal vectors. Sure. That's why I'm saying this has that need not be it's actually reliable, but it's just to have a measure.
Doesn't care about rotation.
And, no, the real, what you can show is the real part is the imaginary part that if you take the absolute value, then it doesn't care.
Right, right. So this is just a real part.
The polarization.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. Right. So this is just a real part of Psi 4. So again, this is fast moving, so watch out. So here you will see these two holes coming together, sucking some of the radiation, and then something is coming out, which... Let me do this. Okay, I'm going to go frame by frame. Whoops. Is it better? So that's basically what we're seeing. So there is an apparent spinning hole there with just this pattern that is coming out, but again, it need not be, need not make any good sense. A feature issue.
The apparent horizon at this moment is where?
The apparent horizon is a bit bigger than this.
Okay.
It's about one grid zone from there. I actually cut. There is only one grid zone from this area where you see nothing on the apparent horizon. And the feature issue is something I would like to work on. We have this code working nicely. Just try to get all the bio component and try to see if there is some filling, because there is still this that long-standing issue where there is filling in the general case or not, and it would be nice to look at that. But that's not official. Okay, the real waves. The real waves we do have in place, basically, all the components. We have a 3+1 code, we have a matching code, and we have a characteristic code. We can couple all of them together and go all the way to Sky and get the real waves. The problem is that, well, we still are curing the problems in the 3+1 code part of the code. We're also curing the problem in the matching part of the code, and we're waiting for the whole thing to come together. We are also waiting for the characteristic code to be in parallel. But, well, there is work there to be done. But we're still, even though, with these problems, we can still put the thing together and try to use whatever we think is working at the moment. So we use this matching, half of the matching. We don't have to inject back from the characteristic domain into the Cauchy domain. What we are using just the characteristic and the module as just a way of extracting the waves and going all the way to Sky and see what it looks there. So this is basically the setup. We have this region where we're using this Cauchy evolution at some tube, work tube there. We do a transformation to get the boundary values for a characteristic evolution, and we evolve all the way to Sky. And there we obtain the news, the plus and cross component of the news. So what I'm showing you here is what this wave pattern that we've obtained there. This is it's kind of tricky because it's in a stereographic coordinates. So basically, this is the equator, if you want. That's the direction where the equator is. The pole is exactly there. And you see stronger emission in the direction where these holes are coming into this merger phase. And the amplitude is not that big. If you believe this calculation, then you get about 4% total radiated mass, but there is still a lot of work to be done in improving this. The extraction radius has been put at 16M. And we're working on getting a finer resolution run where we'll be able to get a more reliable calculation for the waves. So finally, the future issues. I guess the most important one is the gauge condition. Again, we have to come up with some way to obtain decent gauge conditions for this kind of evolution. And we're also working on initial data. We're also trying to, as I said, get this matching going so that we can remove this problem of outer boundary. And that will require a revision of the matching module along the lines of what Bela is going to be talking, that while you cannot give everything, you cannot inject everything from the characteristic part into the Cauchy part, but just some of the variables, and then the errors should be obtained by constraint solving. We're working on getting finer resolution runs, and for that we'll need to get these elliptic solvers going. And we're also working in trying to interface these runs with the perturbative analysis because, or what Bernd talked yesterday, there is a point where, well, if you have evolved that far that you've seen a single black hole, well, in principle, one should be able to come up with conditions to give it to the perturbative people so that they can keep going. We can use that both as a way of obtaining the radiation of this collision and as a double check of what we're doing in the 3+1 run, because you can imagine that if your code is crashing at 20M, but already at 5M you have a single hole, well, you can run to 10M, give that data to the perturbative people, and then evolve to 15M and compare what the perturbative treatment is giving you and what the numerical solution is giving. So that's basically it. Yeah, we have lots of possibilities. We can boost them this way, that way, but this is the first cut we've done. Well, I mean, a very interesting one was the one that Larry was mentioning, this cosmic screw, which makes the end black hole a very simple looking black hole. So it would be nice to do that first to minimize the problem, try to cure the problems there and take it from there, but we haven't done that. No, this was grazing. No, except that we need to get the right gauge condition. So it might, this lapse and shift obtained from this superposition way of doing things might not be able to take us that far. So we need to get something that is more general. Right. When we have a single black hole, we think we can cure those problems. We have good indications of how we can go around treating those problems. But the main problem that we will have to face is, well, what gauge conditions are going to lead us to these kind of things before they actually merge.
Okay. So at the moment, just to be sure, the gauge condition prevents you from seeing the quarter of the orbit, just part of that.
We haven't tried it, but I don't think this just superimposing these two things will be able to lead us to an orbit or something. What do you mean parameterize specification? Well, the only parameter we were changing along the plane is the region, the center of our excised region.
But you could introduce a couple additional parameters.
Well, yeah, there's this wording of what is steering the evolution. We are building those things into the code run to some time, and if we're looking at these holes are moving this way or that way, then we can go in and check some parameters. And that's basically what the spirit of what we've done when we stop using the superposition of, let's say, lapses and go into the lapse of a single black hole. Well, you want to do that in a smooth way, so we use 5-6 time step to do that smoothly, but I'm not sure how long we can go in that direction. Right, I mean, but that, so there are lots of things to try. The main thing which I would like to get from this workshop or something, okay, of all those possibilities, what would be the smartest one, what would be the best one to use. The good sign of this is even you put in the naive option, let you do something. So now I guess there's everything is room for improvement.
And this is absolutely an open question.
Right, in particular one case is, at the end of the day, we have a single Kerr black hole. Okay, what angular parameter do we use there? Can we use how the apparent horizon is rotating as a guessing parameter? Well, that's something we do, and that's basically what is guiding us to put that number, and it holds better than, well, just putting what you would think in our way. So we're basically using a combination of what would be the total angular momentum with this naive initial data just from Newtonian considerations and how this apparent horizon is moving to come up with some approximation of what this angular momentum parameter is. We put that thing as there and it takes us much longer than, say, other parameters.
Great.
Right. Sure. I'm just presenting this, which was a superposition of two Kerr black holes. At the same time, we've done collision of just head-on Schwarzschild black holes, where we have the infrastructure to solve the elliptic equation. So there, the evolution is much, much cleaner. But then there are some problems that you may not see. So we're like trying to the simple thing and trying. Right. Mm-hmm. We just need more time from NCSA so that we can.
Two of you so far have taken up our offer of using the Quadrature Theater and workshop. All of the other emails are working. So if any of the others of you want to do it,
we actually were very cheap in this run. We used a simple machine Roadrunner. We couldn't use NCSA because Waymo was running there. No, that was a joke. We used this. we were using this. It was a Linux cluster. We were using 40 nodes in that machine, and it took this run takes about a day and a half there. So again, it's not the most the fastest machine out there, and even the communication between nodes is not the best out there. So I'm sure we could have done a much better job in NCSA using the origin. But we're running out of time there, so that's the official story. So we were trying to use our resources.
Using a PSPICE sheet and math. pretty well with the Horizon's decision. However, all those fiddling would not be very satisfactory after spending a lot of time fiddling. We kind of conclude that it would be much better if we use a light sheet than that. The sheet, the coordinate condition determined in terms of the metric at that time, the function of the metric is written given the equation of it.
Okay, that's precisely. That's precisely also what we've seen. In 1D K, the Runge-Mijan show, in order to cure those instabilities, we needed some sort of, I wouldn't say live, would be kind of pseudo-live, because it's like lagging behind. You see what the metric was in the previous time step, and you correct your shift from what you see there. But, right, that's definitely the case. So we have to be pointing in that direction.
Right. You want to have a full live, and also the other consideration is that when you put in the light shift and that, you would like to use also input the information of the time horizon.
Correct.
Where the time horizon is. That information will also help to stabilize the.
Correct.
But the table that is that your evolution equation, which may have had a very close initial value problem, become a set of evolution equations for which nothing is known. They may have an imposed.
It could have, but it, then you can.
This is, I think, a issue that a very good issue for us to discuss here in this workshop, namely when we are faced with a unique hyperbolic system, what do we know about the well postings of the system?
That's a good point. I mean, it could be we're using the ADM system that doesn't have that. It's not known to be well posted in general. So, what are we doing? Well, if we can go, say, for a few tenth of M, let's say, to 100 M, using tricks like the one Saul was describing, but what we're using is the Crank-Nicolson that has some dissipation built in already. Well, it can take us that far. That will let us do some astrophysically interesting problems. And at the same time, we can be starting the survey of all these humongous quantities of hyperbolic systems that are there, out there, and try to decide which one is the best one to go. That's why, well, I tried to ask that question yesterday, and maybe, well, that's another problem that we should be trying to address. There are many, many options of hyperbolic system. Which ones are the ones we should be trying?
Sorry. Yeah, I'd like to come back to the issue that was raised the other day, which is when you use these techniques to get the mission that you have some question, assuming you resolve the you come into this issue of do the bulges in the curvature of the free space, are they in some sense physically natural for that situation? And one of the things that principle you can do to test that out in the simple case of the axisymmetry is to take a Mizner match or something with conditions with the things fairly far apart, and then when they get close to each other, they're zooming at a pretty good speed. And then you have that moment, that frequency. So this, so they're much closer now for you, so they're not quite that fast. Now can you take and do a boost to looking that velocity as a boost velocity? Boost them and add them together. Resolve the constraints. Now you've got two free surfaces you can compare. One is in some sense fairly natural in the sense that it's created by a free ball from the farther out system.
This has been done actually in perturbation theory by Musso and Pines. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean they did exactly that with the going to North Initial Data, and they started it out at some particular separation with a boost velocity, and then they also started to push further out from rest, let them come in and match them and compare. And they did find significant differences.
Yeah, and along those lines, we're also working with Jorge and his group and try to do some comparison between what we're actually trying to run and what the perturbative side. Yes. But
it's not clear that it's generalizable outside of the perturbation approach.
have this really crazy idea. We've thought in terms of extinct, but I think you could think in terms of lasting and shift as well, that if you're initially on a constraint surface and you evolve a little bit off of a little bit of time, that's a little bit close to something. So you could think of resolving conservatively instead of doing a cultural solve. Which would be linear instead of non-linear.
It could be, but the main problem is the holes, and that's what the burn puncture method does. And what this suggestion by Marinetti is that, well, when you're trying to superpose these two holes and you hit each, when you're adding them up, you hit each one by a weight function that would make this the contribution of this hole, where this other hole is, basically go to zero. That might be a way of helping in this solving of elliptic equations, but the holes are the main problem.
Yeah, what boundaries do you apply on some excised surface?
Well, there probably Miss Johnson,
that's
why it's large enough so you know you have a trap surface.
When you're specifying initial data, that's fine, but I mean during an evolution when you're trying to resolve the constraint.
Yeah,
I don't think you can just arbitrarily specify.
No, but then you may be able to do it as an operator application, right, where you apply the Hamiltonian constrained operator, and you don't actually have that solve the constraint, not get rid of the boundary problem.
Again, the core question is the frequent process is the 12 metric curvature variable is for constraints. What combination do you use? What's the right?
And as long as you're doing an evolution, it doesn't matter which way you split them up, as long as that's not an issue. I mean, when you're posing initial data, it's an issue which way you specify the decomposition, because there you're picking and choosing where you want to put this extra bit of gravitational wave. But during the evolution, it's irrelevant.
I mean, the one thing I find out is that if you're trying to cure a problem,
but you guys got a couple problems. First of all, you don't have proper two-block hole data right now.
Right.
And that's partly because you're not looking to solve it.
Right, we can do that for this non-spinning holes. Well, that's, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Yeah. Well, the cactus, we don't have all cactus, we have the driver, the cactus driver, not the thorns, say. But, I mean, we're talking about collaborating with the gone people and try to go back and forth in that direction.
Then there's also a number of other issues, too. We want a Herschel background.
Right.
Number two, we have excised regions. I mean, the solves that are in the active, I'm not sure they handle excised regions for initial value problems. So, I mean, once it's been said, well, you could always look at other
right, but in principle, it shouldn't be that hard to try to combine what they already have and work on that and take it from there. It's not clear, but well, but then how do you treat the holes? I mean, Bernie's managing to take them out. He just makes them disappear. But now. And then the other problem is that in the case of charging a hole, well, you just, in principle, you should be able just to take a point. In the case of curve, then you have to take out the whole ring, and then that gets complicated.
Based on the finite element, so the mesh is conforms to, say, historical boundaries, and so that makes the decision problem easier in the sense of, you know, you're covering your tobacco a lot better than you would the Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, there's some movements there and in terms of the adaptivity,
It's final element. The Daniel Hall's?
Michael
Hall's quote. So, Mijan has generated that kind of data. We haven't run it because there's, so many people, so many hours to work, and so many computer time resources. Right. I mean, if we keep working on that, that it will be solved fairly soon. But, we've gone into the...
It's just a
background in the code that you didn't write, so it's always hard to go in the code.
No, it's just a matter of putting on the background. Right. Okay.
And understand the code. But I guess the final message is, this is another proof of concept. Excision can be used in the case of two black holes. We can make them evolve. We can make them get together. We actually have, at some point, this region excites these two holes, and then we change this into a sphere that actually contains these two, and we can keep going. So, it speaks pretty well about this approach of excision. There are lots of things that we can do still to improve excision because there are other options, but... I think we can feel fairly confident that excision can take us somewhere. At the very end, we have this unbounded growth of at some point. So there is a combination there of not having at the boundary of the excision. There is not having enough points in these buffer zones that you need to do this current implementation of causal differencing and things like that. So. We're trying to investigate and separate these problems and which one is actually giving us the worst. An orbiting black hole doing this?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't tried it, but maybe. But I wouldn't be sure what the problem is, where it's the excision that is not working probably, or where I'm not using the right coordinate conditions. That's what Mijan did.
Yeah, in that case,
but he hit the boundary.
Well, what are the gates? So the first two black hole orbiting problem, okay. Let's say, okay, supposing you're not with this. Okay, let's take that down. So the question is, what are the gate conditions you need? If you want the coordinates to stay put, what are the latitudes that you take that may allow you to propagate the black hole to the main?
So,
now, you feel like, in terms of the decision to use itself, whether or not you're table. That's one issue. The other issue is mitigation. The combination of the two is something to fill up.
You try to do the housing problem.
Well, but can you begin to address the problem where the system will work just for a single black hole the same way that you did the translation of one hole? That's what you call it in transforming, right?
Well, we'll do the
hole, you run it, and you cannot run it forever because it will go across the grid.
We'll do the wobbling black hole. I mean, the data is somewhere.
Okay,
there's
you
a no, the 60 m, it was hitting the grid. It was just five points over the grid, the boundary.
That's the problem.